This episode is brought to you by BetterHelp. How's your social battery doing right now? I've never used that phrase, but I instantly know what it means. And I think it's interesting because it works two different ways. Some people need to have their social battery charged, and they this is the introvert extrovert thing. And some people, you know, like they've got enough energy for other people, but then it's time to sort of step away. And, you know, as we get to this part where winter is ending, which again, it's opposite. I love winter. I don't need it to end. You know, you start getting together with more people and it can be a little draining on top of every other thing that we all have going on in our lives. I just assume everybody's overburdened because I think everybody's overburdened, but it can be tough to deal with. And also one of the things is like, you can't necessarily understand why you feel that way or why it's making you tired, but it's a real thing. If you think that you could use some help with it, if you could figure out a way to make things better, therapy is a great way to help. It can give you that kind of self-awareness to know how to ride that level just right so that you feel good, you feel right. If you're thinking of starting therapy, you can give BetterHelp a try. It is entirely online. It is designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule, which is, again, we've been talking about being busy, right? You got to fit that in. You got a lunch period. You can do it during that time, whichever. That's possible. You fill out a brief questionnaire and get matched with a licensed therapist. You can switch therapists at any time for no additional charge. I like that. There is no penalty for finding the person who is right for you. Find your social sweet spot with BetterHelp. Visit BetterHelp.com/iFanboy today. Get 10% off of your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/iFanboy.
You are about to participate in the most ambitious culinary experiment ever imagined.
This competition is going to test everything.
Adapt quickly to anything. I mean anything. The wildest day of your life starts right now.
All new 24 and 24 Last Chef Standing. Sunday night at 8 on Food Network. Stream on Max.
You're listening to the iFanboy Pick Week Podcast, episode 564, brought to you by Geek Fuel and iFanboy listeners just like you.
Christmas time.
Welcome to the iFanboy Pick the Week Podcast, episode 564. My name is Ron Richards, and I'm here with Josh Flanagan.
You!
Who has survived from Kuala Lumpur. We want to hear all about it, Josh.
Monday morning, someone's like, so you were in the KL? And I was like, what? I love the KL.
The KL.
I don't know what you're talking about. And like, I was completely baffled.
And the mastermind of the Kuala Lumpur trip, Connor Kilpatrick.
No, I don't know who this person is in the script, but it's not me.
It's Connor Kilpatrick.
I fixed it online.
We are from iFanboy, and we like comic books. Every week, we read a stack of comics, and one of us picks their favorite book, and we call that the pick of the week. And then we'll talk about that book, some other fun stuff. Good times are going to be had. We're going to read your email. We're going to answer your questions.
Keep going.
But in fact, that fun isn't even going to stop. So before we get into the pick of the week, we want to quickly give a little programming note. All of you loyal iFanboy patrons, you're going to want to tune in on Monday, the day after this podcast comes out, Monday the 5th of December at 9:30, Connor?
9:30 Eastern.
9:30 p.m. Eastern is our next and our December patron hangout. So be sure you stay tuned to patreon.com/iFanboy to get the link to watch it on YouTube. Only members only, patrons only. So definitely tune in for that. And stay tuned later the show. We know a lot of you tune out right after the pick of the week or right after the books or right after like the superpowers. But stay tuned.
You finish and I'll tell you something. Go ahead.
I was going to say, stay tuned till the end of the show where we're going to run down the holiday schedule for December. We got a lot of podcasts, a lot of stuff. December is a unique month. So you're definitely going to want to stay tuned to hear what the deal with that is. Connor, what did I miss?
So for Thanksgiving, we were driving up to Santa Barbara, and Megan was like, I want to finish listening to one of your shows. Do you mind? I said, no, that's fine. And so we finish.
That's weird.
It was the G.I. Joe show, so it was still funny. We got to the end of the patron powers, and she turned it off. And I went, oh, my God.
You too.
You do it too.
Listen, people, what this is going to mean is we're just going to start doing the other podcast at the top of the show because we don't want you to miss it.
Flip the format.
Yeah. It's just going to be like that. It's just going to stop. The tape's just going to stop.
Just listen to the whole thing, please. Come on. So
that part is the part that's the most interesting for us.
Yeah, it's the most fun, honestly. It's when the wheels come off. But anyway.
Yeah.
So stay tuned to the end of it for the holiday schedule and all the fun stuff and more info about the Patreon hangout. But until then, Josh, you had the pick of this pick of the week for this week. Tell us all about it.
Well, folks, Deadly Class number 24 is somewhat historic in the history of the pick of the week. Canon.
Why?
Because it's the first.
No, oh, here we go. Here we go. I know where he's going.
I think.
Okay, sorry.
He can't even
it's
do
the
it.
First time I can't. It,
let's hear it.
It killed me. This is the first time that I've ever picked a book specifically because of a 5-page fart sequence.
I knew it. I knew it.
I'm not kidding. I could not stop laughing. I read this last night. It was late. Like, I was, like, way past bedtime. And I got to the planning camp going. Genuinely, like, tears of laughter. And it never got gross. It never was. Nope. It wasn't, like, a big poop joke. It was Teutonic in nature. It was as if Thor had to fart. The language was sublime. The way that the sort of narration of the guy who had to fart went. And I just was like, and before that I was thinking, I've got nothing. You know, like I got nothing going on. And it made me laugh so much. And it was a good issue. Like, these are all good issues. They're well done. But man, I considered just reading the entire thing as my review. Just all of the dialogue.
So context, maybe, if people don't read the book, is that the new class is hanging out. Is it Halloween? They're all dressed up.
It's Halloween. It's Halloween. Yep.
And the giant German who is dressed as Thor, which he has the helmet on,
which was funny in and of itself,
decides to tell them about the gastrointestinal story that he had from the previous day. And it was a very funny story.
Now, why Saya does not like him.
It was in the context of within the characters of the book, which is a nice kind of connection. This was a great issue, Josh, I agree. And this issue not only included the farting in the elevator sequence, but it also included a public defecation story, and Rick Remender tweeted out earlier in the week that this issue contains two stories that are based on true events. And the public defecation story, I know exactly the story he's referencing, and it's 10 times worse than what happened in the book. So
yeah, because that didn't really seem that bad.
Yeah, no, the real story is that bad. But yeah.
So. I held my knees for leverage so that the gust would not thrust me forward, and I opened myself. 100 dying elephants bellowed in grief. A grotesque sound grew in tenor. The ghosts of my sadness sung of their ordeal.
This might be one of the most Rick, like, channeling Rick's inner id, you know?
I know. He really has a gift.
Yeah.
He has lots and lots of gifts, and I don't even, like, he's a supremely talented comic book creator, writer, artist, whatever. But there is a sort of low-hanging fruit kind of joke that he just does real well.
Yep.
You know, and the way that he killed me, made me laugh a ton. And I had read the issue before this, right in a row, because I was back a little bit. So I sort of got a big chunk of story. And what I kind of came up with is that, like, I don't know, I might be liking this era, this second sort of year, I guess, a little more.
Yes.
Because all the character, it's a little pared down. There was a ton going on in the last one. And this is a much more focused sort of, there's less students to keep track of. We know the world, so he doesn't have to go through all that. And we're just hanging out with these new kids, and we don't have a bead on them yet. They're all over the place.
Yeah. And the main guy in the first era was really mopey.
Yeah.
That's true. You know, I mean, these are all teenagers here, but there's no one constantly, you know, crying about everything.
Some of them are, like, heroic or likable necessarily.
But it's also early enough in that you're still learning about. We're still learning about them. We're still understanding kind of where everything is, you know, where all the pieces are falling and whose side are they on and all that sort of stuff. And I think it's pacing it really well. And an issue like this just, you know, and there was a great device with the character, the Christian character from South Africa, who's writing a letter to her parents. And, you know, and it's that prose is side by side with some great panels going through each of the characters. And it furthermore, you know, cemented who they were and what their personalities were and gave you a little more insight into them. So,
right. But even with all that, we still don't know what her deal is.
True. Exactly. Right. Yeah.
Although they kind of like somebody kind of explained it to her and she kind of clammed up. You know, like I think it's the Vietnamese kid was yeah. just like called it where he said, "Oh, your parents have been hit, you know, taken by warlords, and you're just here so that they'll be freed because you're huge or something." And I was like, "Oh, well, that's kind of interesting." Yeah.
I also don't know that we've had the concept of the rat explained so clearly before, or maybe I just missed it. But the idea that there are students at the school solely there to be killed by the other students,
right? Mm-hmm. Yeah,
and I don't think I caught that previously.
Agreed. Right.
But she's one of them. She's a rat. But she's only in the school. So for the final exams, the other students have somebody to kill.
They're just meat. They're meat.
You know, I thought my school was hard, my high school, but it was not, apparently.
It was the bratwurst, though. It was the agony of 1,000 bratwursts.
But I think you're right, Josh. Originally, when Reminder came out with all those books at once, we liked Deadly Class a lot, but I don't know that it ranked near the top. But now I look forward to it more.
I almost stopped reading it at one point, and that's turned around.
I think I look forward to it the most now, I think, of all of them.
Well, I mean,
for me, but it's right there.
Yeah, for me, from the get-go, you know, I love Black Science, and we all know Matteo Scalera is a beast. But from the get-go, Wes Craig just brought something completely unique. And, you know, from the moment, you know, from that first sequence with Saya on the motorcycle and all that, you know, that kind of stuff, that, you know, every issue is like, all right, well, what is Wes going to do with this? And it was great to see this issue to let him flex some of his cartooning muscles a little more, similar to his own personal work, like Black Hand Comics, which he's done, where I feel like the farting story and the poop story were done more in a looser kind of cartoon.
Yeah.
You know, kind of
I actually wondered if that was a different artist.
No, it's
for
him.
A second.
Yeah, he's great.
No, I know that, but yeah. It was just done in a different style that worked. And it's funny because I'm giving Rick a lot of credit for the prose there, but obviously the cartooning that goes along with it are great. Yeah. Is great too.
I mean,
he's something special. Like Wes Craig is like, I don't know. It's almost every once in a while an artist and a book will come along and you'll be like, well, what else is this guy going to do?
Right. Chu is a great example. What I think is so unique about what Remender's books are compared to other creator-owned books is that quite often it's, you know, okay, Mark Miller's got a new book and it's done by Eminent or it's done by Capullo and it's all this sort of stuff, but you still get the idea of those singular creators collaborating. But what Remender is doing is Remender is working with people like Wes Craig, Matteo Scalera, Jerome Pena, and creating these wholly unique things that really could only be done by the two of them together.
Yes.
You know, and I think that is a huge, huge aspect of it. No one creator on either side, the writing or the artist, stands out. And it's like, you've got to read this because of Rick's writing or because of Wes's art. It's them, the true collaboration that makes them really sing in the books that I read first when they come out. So.
And also, those are not, me too, those are also not based on an all-star artist.
Right.
Not to say they're art. I mean, Opeña pretty much is now, but yes, he is because of his collaboration.
Yeah.
But it's more that they're really good artists. And Bendis used to do this.
Yep.
Way back in the day, Bendis was the guy pulling people in. Like I think his aesthetic changed a little in his, you know, who works with him. But that used to be him. You know, Joe Casey's another guy like that. Like he finds a guy who is perfect for the story. It doesn't matter who that guy is.
Yep.
But Rick happens to do it with guys who, like, we're all like, wow, that person's a superstar. Why don't we know about it? You know, he'll find that, and it's a perfect melding. You're absolutely right.
So, well, I was glad to see this picked because I was waiting for you to send the email with what we're going to talk about, and I was like, oh, if he doesn't include Deadly Class, I'm adding it because
I mean, I know I tend to always bring up books that make me laugh, but this is like one of the big, and it continued for, it wasn't just like one page that made me laugh. It kept going, and I was like, 5 pages of fart. Yep. Really good stuff.
Really,
but
good
not
stuff.
Well. It was good.
Long story.
I liked it. I liked it a whole lot, and I needed the laugh.
I really enjoyed Batman Annual #1. I wasn't going – this is a fifth week. DC basically put out no books. they put out a couple of annuals. I wasn't going to read them originally, but then I saw that the creative team on Batman Annual was actually pretty top shelf one.
Yeah.
So I read it and I really liked it.
Did you like all of them?
No.
Okay.
Well, I mean, you know, it's an annual. It's that, you know, they got four or five short stories. You're not going to like them all.
I assume you got pretty excited about seeing Paul Dini and Neil Adams together.
Yeah, but
just as a concept. Yeah, but
as a concept, less than execution. Like, I think I liked each subsequent story a little bit less. Is what I came.
So okay, so yeah, I was wondering that. So first story was Tom King and Dave Finch, the Ace the Bat Hound story.
Your buddy Dave.
Yeah.
I actually think this is my favorite.
Did I
Batman.
Say Dave?
You said Dave Finch.
Dave's not here, man.
I think it's my favorite, actually, Batman story that Tom King has written so far.
Really?
Despite the bit where Bruce Wayne plays with Ace the Bat Hound and he talks like the people talk to dogs. I don't picture Bruce Wayne ever doing that.
And no, but that's the point. With dogs, people do shit like that. I hitched on that. I saw it and I thought, would he do that? And I decided, yes, he would. This is the one place he's going to do that.
But I think that the story is that, you know, the Batman finds one of the Joker's gang of dogs they were all card themed and he was the ace dog and he takes it in, and it's the story of Alfred slowly training it over the course of a few months to be a pet and become Ace the Bat Hound. I thought this was Tom King told us that, or he said in many interviews that he wants to bring back an air of the animated series to the Batman books, and I thought this was the most like that.
I think the other big story of this is the continuing idea that Dave, as I call him, Dave Finch, I find his artwork to be much more palatable than I have in a very long time.
Mm-hmm.
He's really cut it down.
I didn't read this because it was an annual and I just said whatever. Who inked it, though? Is the same inker on the first run of Batman?
It's just an attempt. It's David
buddy
Finch.
Dave Finch also inked it. Yeah.
Oh, wow. His buddy Dave Finch inked it. Okay. When Dave Finch and Dave Finch get together, just some great things happen.
Oh, the Finches?
Yeah, the Finches.
Oh, forget about it. The only thing about it is I think, I don't know who this colorist is, Gabe Eltabe. That looks like a fake name.
Oh, Eltabe. No, it's not. He's real. Okay. Yeah. Yeah,
looks like a Star Wars name where they just made it backwards.
It does.
I think that if you had Jordi Belair color this, it would be over the top.
She can't color everything, Josh.
I know that. I don't mean her, but like somebody who has that just a little muted because it's a little like vibrant in places where I don't know that it needs to be.
Right.
Muted isn't even really the word. Just bring it down a notch. Anyway, the point is like I used to write him off completely. And I get that people like him. It's just not my style, but I like what he's doing here.
Yeah, it's just a sweet little short story.
Yep.
I like the sequence where Alfred's training him, and we see Batman in the background on his back computer talking about whatever's happening, and the crimes get sort of increasingly more ridiculous. Mm-hmm. And then one of the panels is just Kite Man. And it was, in the context of the joke, the escalation of it was very funny.
Yep.
I liked it a lot. I thought the second story, Scott Snyder and Ray Fox and Declan Shalvey, was good. The sweet little story about the moment where crime stops in Gotham during the holidays.
Yep.
The Dini story of Neil Adams, I didn't really love only because it is not really the Dini Harley Quinn. It's the current Harley Quinn. And I don't really like
it. It was a combination of them, I think.
Yeah.
I don't like Harley Quinn is what I'm starting to learn. I don't know that I know the difference. I know the visual difference between them, but like, I just don't, it doesn't do anything for me.
Yeah, and then the Ray Fox. No, who did the other, the third, the fourth?
Steve
story?
Orlando and
Riley Rossmo.
Riley Rossmo, which looked fine. Like that character looks like Rasputin.
Yes,
from the book that he did, and I was really confused. I think that Steve Orlando's scripts don't do it for me.
Yeah, right now they don't either for me. Really,
I mean, I want to, and like, there's a thing about them that doesn't work for me. And he's doing a lot of stuff. Stories aren't bad. Like, they just doesn't sound quite right to me.
Looked good, though.
Yep, it did look good. I like Raleigh Rossmo a lot, and I like that he's got a place now.
Then I kind of skimmed the last one.
Yep, yeah.
I didn't really, it wasn't really. You
had a very similar experience. You didn't like
I got about a page in, and I was like, oh, okay.
You didn't like it as much as you alluded to at the beginning of the segment.
The issue?
Yeah.
I like the first two stories a lot.
Yeah, that's true.
I thought the Surf Story was I like the art a lot.
It did not feel like a waste of time. I will give you that.
Yeah, totally.
And I don't know about it in contrast, but over in the Superman side, they took a completely different tack with their annual, which was just basically a done in one story by the. I don't think Jorge Jimenez is a regular artist, is he?
No, but he's a fill-in guy.
Right. Okay. Well, it's Tomasi and Gleason on the story, and basically, the story created a problem that had not previously existed, and then Swamp Thing helped solve it.
Yeah, I didn't like it.
Which just wasn't much to it. I thought it looked great. This Jorge Jimenez guy, I like what he does.
Yeah, it was like a 30-page fight scene.
Yep. Which was basically, I like the art because there was no point for that fight scene.
Yeah, the art was great. I think Jorge Jimenez is really good. But you're right. I mean, the whole thing was like this new Superman's absorbing sun in a different way than the old one did, and it's throwing the world off balance, and the green is dying, and so they've got to fix that. And okay,
it was for some reason that caused a drought. All right, whatever. And then it was like they fought because Swamp Thing's like, "Here, I can fix it," and Superman's like, "Don't touch me." And then they fought for a while.
A long while, yeah.
Yeah, you're right. But I guess because I was just like, I'll just keep looking at it. That's fine.
This is the guy, I think, who, remember, we talked about him before, who we were like, okay, the costume doesn't look so bad, and this guy draws it. Like, he's really good.
Yeah, you're right. Yeah, you're right. It's very, very dynamic action in the way that people are being drawn. I like the coloring, too. But, so there's that. That's nice things to say.
Yeah. That's all I got for that one.
It's interesting, though, that, like, you know what? There's a question about annuals later.
Yeah,
and we will come back.
We'll come back to it. Yeah, especially funny because I said we should talk about an annual, but
Ron,
but yeah.
I don't want to hear your heavy sighing while we talk about the DC annuals, and we're about to hear you talk about Inhumans versus X-Men number zero.
Well,
IVX.
Yeah, that's the thing. It's the fight. So in all the listings online and the shipping list and on Comixology stuff, it's listed as IVX. But what does the fucking cover say? Inhumans versus X-Men. So what is it, Marvel? Come on.
I thought it was 1 versus 10. I was like, what's this?
But
1 versus 10 0.
Inhumans vs. X-Men number zero starts. This is the, I guess, the prelude to the next big event coming out of Death of X. And I gotta give Marvel credit. I mean, I don't know if they're doing this consciously to placate the Richards contingent, but
I just want to mark that down. I'm gonna have to use that again.
They're serving up some stories that are hot piles of shit. And having them be illustrated by artists that I love. And in this particular case, we got Kenneth Rocafort on art duties, drawing the story from Charles Soule, who, again, I really don't, just like with Death of X, I don't blame Charles Soule and Jeff Lemire because I do not believe this is from the brains of the writers. I believe that editorial is saying, here, this is what you need to do with them, go do it. And they're just doing a job, which is what Work for Hire is. But in this case, so Death of X finishes up. And as you remember, Marvel now launched and we were at – it was a fucking DC year one problem because we lost the whole year of the X-Men continuity.
It's only a problem to you.
It's only a
problem
to me.
No one else has a problem.
Yeah, these segments are difficult for me.
But so, well, just sit back. I was quiet. I was quiet while Superman talked to a plant, okay?
Did you read that?
No.
Oh, okay.
what this does is this fills. So Death of X happens, Cyclops is dead, and this fills in the gap between where we are now with the X-Men books and when Cyclops died in one 20-page issue, which kind of jumps, you know, 8 months ago, 6 months ago, 4 months ago, and it explains that after the death of Cyclops, a truce between the Inhumans and the X-Men, and as a sign of peace, Beast is welcomed into Atalan to research the Terrigen Cloud to try to figure out a way to make it stop from killing mutants. And while he's doing this, Emma is training and Emma is talking to Magneto and talking to other X-Men teams and, you know, basically building up to the point where, as she explains to Magneto, you know, Beast, if he's the clock is ticking. He hasn't figured this out. If he doesn't figure this out, then I'm going to figure it out. And which I guess is fine. At one point, she goes to visit the young X-Men and talks to Iceman and Bobby. And we're just like, I'm going to need your help. Can I count on you? And Beast literally says... I just like this just cracked me up because this is, I don't know if this is lazy writing or whatever, but he says, well, we'll need some specifics, but if things are really that dire, of course we'll do. And she's like, great, good enough for me, I'll be in touch, and leaves. So she's giving no specifics. It's all very surfacey. But basically the idea is that at the end of the 8 months, Beast discovers that the Terrigen, he sees some Terrigen activity in the Savage Land, and he chooses to withhold that from his Inhuman science partner. And then Emma shows up at X-Haven, where Storm is, and says, you know, okay, we need to do something about this. The waiting is over. And that's leading up to the Inhuman versus X-Men thing, IVX number one. Which is just, I mean, it's a good catch-up. Rocafort is great, and I love good Rocafort. And this had some really great, you know, some really, really good Rocafort layouts and things like that. But it, the whole thing, I just, can we just fast forward to the end of it? I want, all the stuff they've announced with Resurrection looks exciting and looks hopeful, and this is just like a slog that we need to get through. So, I hate the Inhumans. It looked great, though. Yeah. So, see, was that so bad, Josh?
I'm sorry, I'm back now. What do we need?
Connor, did you read it or did you just flip through it?
Yeah, I read it. It was fine. It's a zero issue. It's really hard to judge. Literally, the point of the zero issue is just to move pieces around on a board.
Well, it's moving pieces around on a board that haven't been moved around because they've ignored the story for the past year. Like if you
that's the part that I don't like listening to.
Exactly. If you told a good story, you don't need a zero issue. So,
yeah, but I mean, not necessarily. If you're I don't agree with that.
Okay. Well.
Because they told this time jump story, and then they're going back and
C versus R, number zero.
But it's fine. It doesn't matter, really.
Yeah.
Well, ultimately, so, I share your same reservations. I don't care for the Inhumans as this in this role.
Right.
I like them occasionally showing up. You know, it was a big deal when they showed up.
And now it's not.
And then they leave. And now they're just always around and they're just losing their magic a little bit.
No, the magic is gone. It's stupid. What's even stupider now is I'm looking at the dumb checklist for this event, and I'm gonna have some holes in the story because I'm sure as hell not reading Uncanny Inhumans.
Why? It's good.
It is good.
Ugh. Bad taste in my mouth.
I'm also not reading all of it. I'm not gonna read. Hold on, I'm calling it up. I'm not going to read Deadpool and the Mercs for money, or Uncanny X-Men.
Now, why have it be Deadpool and the Mercs for money and not Deadpool's, just the Deadpool book? Oh, God, this is just...
Cash money!
Yeah, stupid.
One sells more than the other. The one that sells more is getting left alone.
Jesus Christ, this is going to go until March.
Two events a year now, bitches.
Oh,
by the way, that is optimistic.
Yeah.
When's the last time an event has actually happened on time?
Yeah, how many? Wait, so there's 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13, 14, 15, 16, 17, 18, 19 books that all need to ship on time between now and March.
I still feel like they haven't ended Battle World. Like, what happened at the end there?
Gosh.
We don't know.
All right, well, anyway. All right, before we move on, we want to thank our sponsor for this episode. We want to thank Geek Fuel for sponsoring this episode of Fanboy. And listen... You're a geek. You love to get geeky stuff in the mail. It's all the rage. Geek Fuel is some great folks who are doing it right. With Geek Fuel, you get a cool box of stuff sent directly to your house. It's a mystery box for geeks and gamers that's got over $50 worth of value for around $15 at your price. Every box gets an exclusive t-shirt, a full downloadable game, and about 5 to 7 geeky items. And listen, special offer for iFanboy listeners. If you buy Geek Fuel now, you can get a limited edition variant of Suicide Squad number one with the certificate and everything to show that it is yours, and it is limited and it is exclusive. So you definitely want to pick that up by going to geekfuel.com/ifanboy. All right, so that free bonus item comes in your first box, and every other box after that will have a ton of cool geeky stuff that you can pick up for the low price of just around $15.
Doing the math, it's over $50 worth of value there. Yeah, easy.
Great. You it's can't great. Afford not to do it. Yeah. At that price.
Yeah, exactly. So if you go to geekfuel.com/ifanboy, you can sign up for Geek Fuel and start getting cool stuff in the mail because everybody loves to get mail. This is just about all the U.S. post office is good for these days anymore, is getting these boxes in the mail. So might as well do it. So, all right. So geekfuel.com/ifanboy. We thank them for their support.
So, Josh, did Ms. Marvel 13 come out late? Is that what happened?
Yeah, that's kind of what I got from it. I was like, this is awkward reading about voting in democracy now when I've lost all faith in everything.
It was a very enjoyable after-school special is what this issue was.
Oh, no. It was. And I applaud them, which is why I want to talk about it.
the one-shot story called Election Day that's all about voting and your civic responsibility and your duty, and the only problem is it came out about a month after Election Day. So I think that something happens.
I was also nice that she fixed gerrymandering in less than 24 hours.
So basically, there's a big, you know, big elections coming up, and the mayor is going to lose because suddenly there's been a secret gerrymandering and everyone's districts are broken. And I don't think it happens as quickly. I don't think you suddenly have to move your school like that. But anyway,
it's not New York City because that is a mess of bureaucracy.
Hydra is behind it. They're trying to get their candidate for some reason as the mayor of Jersey City, and she solves it. But getting everyone, there's lots of pages of information dumps on how to vote and how to find out how to vote and where to go.
This is just embarrassing to come out a month later.
That's what I mean.
It's like 2 weeks late.
No, it's not.
Is it?
Next week,
I don't know.
It's almost exactly a month late.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
I'm really trying not to pay attention anymore.
That's fair.
But still, you know what? All of that is totally true, but it was still delightful. There is an attitude. The Kamala character is delightful, and I still think you should read it, everything else aside.
And in this fantasy world, they rallied the people, and they voted the Jill Stein character in, so that's nice.
Oh, Jesus Christ.
Instead of having her ruin the election. I'm sorry. Go ahead. So my thought on 7-2 Eternity is that, you know, we talk a lot about your Mateo Scaleros and your hot young gunslingers in town who are...
It's Connor Scalera.
Scaleros. And
that's multiple Scalera.
Yeah, multiple Scalera. And I feel like Jerome Pena is the guy who comes in and says, remember me, and blows everybody up.
Yep.
Because... I'm not following this book at all, but I think it's beautiful.
I don't know what that was, but I'm going to keep looking at it.
Yeah.
I actually thought between 2 and 3, I was like, okay, I kind of know what's going on here.
What I thought was interesting is that issues 1 through 3 really just set up for issue 4. And I don't mean that in a idiotic way. I mean, like, it's a little preamble, and I got the sense that next issue is when the adventure starts.
Well, yeah, they form the seven.
Yeah.
Yeah, they form the seven who are going to eternity with the king. So, yeah.
He's just amazing. Like, I literally just took about maybe 3 or 4 minutes a page just looking at every detail and just, you know, like getting it as close to my eyes as I can. I just want to. Pena is just he's a monster. I love
him. Did you rub your eyeballs on it?
I did.
You read this for an hour.
I did. Listen, I took my time. I slowly read it.
It's like that.
Yeah. He's like, you forgot about me, didn't you? Boom. And this, I mean, Jesus.
And it's funny because the strategy with this book, at least from what Rick had told me last time I saw him, was that they started it a year and a half ago, and it's just like, just let Jerome draw without worrying about the shipping schedule, get it all done, you know, and make something amazing. That was the mandate, and that's what he's doing. And it was an eternity to wait, but it's going to be so worth it. It's so worth it with every page.
And it's about a superhero team.
Yeah, pretty much. Yeah.
So. It's a dinosaur with a metal jaw.
Yeah.
All right. Do
so,
it.
So Guardians of the Galaxy number 14. It's like half empty, half full. Half full, Bendis working with Kevin Maguire telling a fun Spider-Man story. That's fun. Half empty, it's a flashback story that just punctuates how bad Bendis' run on Guardians of the Galaxy has been. So...
Well, is it not enjoyable?
It was enjoyable, but like the whole thing is that so post Civil War, now the Guardians are.
Stranded. I liked it, but not the way I wanted to.
Right?
Isn't
yeah, no.
that the point to no. enjoy it? If it's enjoyable, then isn't it good by default?
But it's not doing anything. It's not propelling a major story. You know.
So what?
I don't know.
Does every story have to propel every major story? I mean, why can't it just be a story?
But this, are you reading this? Are you reading Guardians?
No.
Okay, well.
So, I don't care about the Guardians of the Galaxy.
Well, there you go. For me.
I like Kevin Maguire.
I love the Kevin. Well, don't get me wrong. I love Kevin Maguire, and I love this. I love the art in this book, and I loved what he did. He's got a Richard Eisenhove colored it, so that was a lot more improved.
A real colorist.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. I'm not saying it, but I mean, what just bothers me is that I feel as if Guardians was a good book, and for whatever reason, it hasn't gotten the full attention of Bendis or whomever, and it just has kind of stagnated since, you know, since Thing joined the team and post Secret War or whatever. And I just want, and I like the idea of them being stuck on Earth, and so I kind of want to see where that goes. And so, like, I was excited to see that, and instead we get a flashback story to a Spider-Man adventure. That's where I'm coming from. That's all. So,
all right. Did you read Old Man Logan?
I did. I did. And I'm surprised you added this, but I
well, Old Man Logan has been on the chopping block for me for a while. I didn't like the last. I really liked the first arc. I didn't really like the second arc. And it's a problem with modern comics. If you don't like an arc, you're stuck for 6 months with that arc.
Right.
Or, I'm sorry, in Marvel time, that's 2.5 weeks
six,
or whatever.
6 days.
Yeah. But, and so at the end of this year, I was like, oh, there's a couple of books I might chop. And I'm looking to, you know, start the new year with some, you know, a cleaner pull list. And this was on the list. But then Felipe Andrade, how do you say,
Andrade,
drew this issue, which is Monster War Part 1, in which Logan teams up with a bunch of S.H.I.E.L.D. special monster specialists to fight Dracula. And I was all in.
Not only is it all in on the story, but Felipe Andrade, who I believe I last saw him doing Scotty Young's Rocket book.
Yeah.
He's great. He's great.
I was not even all in on the story until the very end. I had to convince myself I was going to be in on the story.
Yeah.
It's the art, really.
Yep.
I mean, it's beautiful.
I mean, it's the standard Dracula Marvel story, you know, like Morbius right. is there and Werewolf by Night and all the Howling, you know, the latest Howling Commandos type thing. And up Jubilee, who's been a vampire for up a couple of years, has gotten called back to Dracula, so Wolverine's got to save her. I think I've read this story already, but his art makes it worth it. So, yeah, so it's good.
It's
Jubilee's
gorgeous.
A vampire now?
She's been a vampire for years.
For many years, yeah.
No shit.
Yeah, she got bit right, by a vampire.
She couldn't go outside.
She has a baby.
Shogo, which hasn't aged at all.
No, not at all. No.
That's fine. But the first
she's also 47 now, Josh.
Yeah.
Babies are kind of like vampires.
So when I opened the book, Ron, I was like, oh.
Yep.
And it's not off on the choppy block as long as he's drawing this arc until the arc is over.
Cool. All right.
Yeah.
I look forward to talking about it with you.
Yes.
Alrighty.
Is the energy weird in this episode? Is it just me?
A little bit.
A little weird. I don't know why.
I blame the cocaine.
Let's rally. So every week, if you're a patron in the show, patreon.com/ifanboy, you can vote on a book that we'll add to the rundown. Every week the patrons vote. This week the patrons voted for DC's New Talent Showcase #1. Ironically, with a cover by 64-year-old Klaus Johnson.
Well done, Connor. He prepped for that. It sounded off the cuff. I don't think you know his age off the top of your head, which means well done to you, sir.
I knew I was going to say it, but I looked the age up. This is a little anthology full of short stories written and drawn supposedly by newcomers, although I recognized, at least in the art side, at least half the names.
I can't tell if this is an example of DC's lack of connection to the comic book industry. Or
okay. You know what? Let's make this a two-part conversation.
Okay.
We're going to talk about the stories in the book itself.
Yep.
And then the overall issues surrounding it after. Can we do that?
Sure.
Okay. There was 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9 stories.
Yeah.
We're not going through all of them. What was your favorite?
No.
What was your favorite?
Dead Man.
Yeah, I interviewed Chris Sabella probably 5 or 6 years ago.
I'm pretty sure David Messina worked on the balance with Joe Casey, right?
I mean, yeah. We're gonna get to it.
So Dead Man was great. I really enjoyed the Wonder Girl. Not the Wonder Girl story. The
Wonder Woman
story. Yep.
Which one? There's two.
Oh, the first one with Carrie Randolph on art, because you know Carrie Randolph was great. and actually, to be honest with you, even though he only has a cameo in it, it made me really want Carrie Randolph to be on The Flash.
What was really, really weird about this was, again, these are short stories, and they're sort of just tryouts. It doesn't really matter. But, like, it was Wally West Flash in the old costume.
Yeah.
And then there was a story later on where Kyle and Carol Ferris were a couple. Is that a thing? Are they a couple?
Yeah, I had no idea.
So I actually think that's kind of interesting. I don't know if it's a fault of these stories or not, but it seemed like they all seem like sort of cold opens to adventures that may or may not happen.
Yep.
Yes, that was my biggest problem.
Yep.
Voice wise, I thought they were actually really well done for quote unquote new talent, whatever. Generally I wasn't rolling my eyes, like it sounded good. The guy who did the Hellblazer story, you know, it's pretty good. But also, like, this is a huge story that he was starting to tell that we're never gonna read.
Right.
Also, but I didn't really find any that I was like, oh, but I thought a lot of them had way too many words.
Yeah, yes.
There was a couple where there was a lot of exposition dumping going on.
Yeah.
But on the whole, I thought, you know, as a new talent showcase, pretty good.
Yeah, yeah, I mean, the best way to showcase your new talent is by hiring people who've worked in the industry for years.
Well, I think it said okay, so let's get to it. So I think it said specifically that it's new to DC, which is kind of a
no.
Well, it does.
Little essay at the beginning says it's from the writers for the most part. Most of the writers, I didn't recognize their names. As opposed to the art.
Oh, most of them I did. I mean, Mike Morrissey, who I worked with at Image, like. The writers. I mean, we said Sabella, who worked on the Dead Man story. He's been around. Yeah, I mean, Janelle Jones wrote the Hardwell story. Joelle Jones.
It says the artists are from the 2015 program.
Yeah, you know what? I've known Sonny Liu for quite a while.
Yeah, Sonny Liu. I really enjoyed his graphic novel that I saw him do a signing for at Isotope.
Okay. So here's the thing. I mean, the attitude that – and they did this, and I could talk about this with a greater extent to the DC Talent Workshop in general. It's that, like, they don't want – like, they sell it to you as the idea of these are new people. These are people we farmed out and found, and that's not it. What they're saying is that we are the super extreme big leagues, and we want you to develop yourself before you come in. So they're not – so that whole DC Talent Workshop thing was sort of sold as, you know, amateurs, show us what you got. But the fact is, you had to give them published work.
Right. Yeah.
So it's a little bit of a marketing thing, where they're marketing it one way, but that's not actually the reality.
Right.
Just like, so that's not what it is. But it's funny because DC's kind of like, well, you've got to do all your work everywhere else, and then you're good enough to come work for us. And I was like, have you been reading DC Comics?
Right.
For the past 5 years, because that's not what it feels like to me. I don't know where you're getting all those other people, but the people in here, I know better than most of the new artists that they had come on during the New 52, unless they've been around since the 80s.
Well, yeah, well, because mainly because a lot of this book was woefully missing the South American and Spain contingent. No, it's true. That's true. I mean, that's been who's been driving the art bus on DC for all these years. And if this is a sign that they're going to move away from that, not that all those artists are bad, but not all of them are great. And so, you know, I don't know. It's that's a strange thing.
Josh, do you want to caveat your criticism of the art program?
No.
You need to. Integrity.
Oh, because I was, I applied. But I didn't expect to get it.
Yeah,
I kind of just did it because I was supposed to, and then I was in the middle of it. I thought, I did. I'm not bitter about that in any way. Actually, what's funny is that one of the guys who got it was Dave Ocampo, who's a longtime iFanboy listener, friend of ours.
Also published writer.
Yeah, I mean, but he's done indie stuff. He's never done, like, work for hire, you know, or you know, top five kind of publisher stuff. And so him, I was like, okay, that's actually like he feels like the guy that it was supposed to be made for.
Yes.
Whereas a bunch of other guys have had a ton of other stuff published, and I've known them forever. And I know that's actually the, you know, it's no overnight nice successes. Bendis did comics for 10 years before he worked for Marvel, blah blah blah.
Yeah.
But this new comics economy, I don't know. Like the story of what the things are versus what it actually is, I think are different. And I think the DC engenders that to get more attention.
Yep. Agreed. Agreed.
But like, honestly, the people, a great number of the people in this book are professional comic book creators.
Yep.
Right.
And they're new talent in that, like, they're new hires for DC Comics. But that's not a workshop program. You didn't need to teach these people how to do comics. They taught themselves how to do comics by making comics.
And then DC just said, okay, now here's how you make DC Comics.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. And I think, and maybe to the letter of the law, that's what it is. But that's sure not how I think it was presented.
All right. Well,
Sonny, that's not—he's not a newcomer.
Yeah.
at all.
Kerry Randolph is going places.
Kerry Randolph. Listen, you want to get on that Kerry Randolph train.
What was that Boom? Was it the Boom book?
Yeah, Starborn, and then he did Tech Jacket for Skydown.
Yes, I was reading that. Like, that's professional comic book work for major publishers that he was paid for. It's not new. That's like saying when you know they have somebody come over from Marvel to DC that they're new. It's not. They're right. Professional. So,
ladies and gentlemen, Klaus Janson.
He's going places.
He's going places.
Like this new band, The Shins. Yeah. Come on.
All right. So that said, ratings.
Oh, I actually really enjoyed reading it for the most part. I want to put that out there.
Yep. Ratings.
So three.
I'll give it a three. Sticking with it. There's nothing to stick with, right?
Yeah, it's just we read more of these people's continuing bodies of work.
I'm going to follow that Kerry Randolph. He's going places. So.
Yep. All right. I'm all about David Messina.
All right, so we also like to thank our patrons. Every week we give a few of our patrons, the people who supported us at patreon.com/ifanboy, we give them dumb superpowers.
And, dumb is subjective.
I agree with Ron there.
Let's just say we give them superpowers. Some might be dumb. Some might be frustrating.
I'm trying to lower expectations.
All right, fair enough.
Don't.
When they're awesome, they're a surprise. So first patron we're going to thank is John Bjorling. And John Bjorling can hover 11 inches off the ground.
Only 11. What happens at 11 inches?
He gets as high as he can go.
So it's more of a hovering power.
Hover.
Hover. All right, there you go. Cool.
Not flying.
All right.
No, he can't.
I'm trying to think of
practical. Can he propel himself, or can he just go up?
Well, he can go 11 inches.
Right. No, but he goes up 11 inches. But then, is he just stuck there, or can he move forward?
He can only hover. He can only hover.
So, but if he throws a rope and catches a doorknob 6 feet away and pulls it, he can pull himself.
Yeah, he can pull himself. Yeah. Sure. Okay. It's like a hoverboard.
Tell you what, that's the guy you want with you at the supermarket.
Yeah, that's a good point. or in a small flood.
He could jump off a building and
he wouldn't be able to move.
Land 11 inches off the ground. That would be all right.
Oh, really?
No, hold on.
Hold on.
Oh, there's physics involved here.
There's a lot of physics involved.
There's no physics involved here at all.
What if he jumps on the top of the Empire State Building and the force 9.5 meters per second, I mean, that's going to propel him down past 11 inches into the pavement.
When he hits the 11 inches barrier, does it cushion or does that just work like a floor?
Because
he crushed his legs.
No, because it's his superpowers. None of this makes sense in physics.
We're asking
He just stops.
What if he wants to go? So he can jump off a building and land safely, basically.
Yes.
It has to be feet down.
Yeah, feet down. Yeah.
If he flips around, he's a dead man.
Yeah. If he flips around, he goes up to the moon and stops 11 inches.
He can go to the moon?
No.
Way to bury the lead.
you can't go to the moon.
I think you created a character as useless as or more useless than Mechanek.
Hey, listen, Mechanek is great because he can look over that hill.
No, not even the hill. He can look over this fence.
Yeah, exactly. As long as there's not a footstool around of some kind.
Yeah. Or as long as the fence isn't too high.
Let's not go deep on He-Man characters.
Because I could have used about 11 more inches to get up there.
Oh, man, I miss Triclops. Okay, next up we want to thank Chris Morris. And Chris Morris has the super ability to talk to babies.
Don't we all?
Can't anybody talk to a baby?
I've done it hundreds of times.
No, he understands babies.
He understands babies and can converse to babies. Like, babies understand him, and when they start babbling, he knows what they're trying to say.
So you just took my bird power from last week, and you give it to babies.
Maybe. I just thought it would be a good power to be able to talk to babies.
It would be enormously useful.
Yeah. I mean, think about working for the police. If a baby sees something, they say, no, he did it. There you go.
I became a crime story. I will say my younger son is almost three. I don't understand a goddamn thing he's saying.
Yeah, see?
And he's trying to say things, and he gets mad, too. And he's like, what do you mean?
See, all right. So you call Chris Morris. You bring him over. You pay him $20, and he can translate.
Oh, it's cheap.
I don't know. He sets his own rates. That was an example.
Okay. All right. Well, there you go, Chris.
Next up, be your agent, by the way, Chris Morris. $20 or whatever.
Thomas Thomas Elt has the uncanny ability to identify the species of tree that he's looking at anywhere.
This is very similar to Connor's landscaping prowler from last week.
Oh, is it?
Yeah.
No, it's fine.
No, it's different.
It's different. It is different.
I've been in the woods, and
I just said he can tell you what trees grow best wherever.
Right. No, that's different.
Yeah.
You would look at it and say, "Oh, that's a Dutch elm. That's a maple." I live in a place surrounded by trees, and all I know is that the white ones are birch.
All right.
So he's just a botanist.
He's the botanist.
A master's degree.
He'd have a leg up in that field. I tell you, you go outside right now and you look at those trees and you tell me if you can tell the difference. Which one do you get syrup from? I don't know.
Gosh, you had 2 weeks off. You really should have come better with this one.
That's how we're going to do this now? Because I will walk.
You were in Kuala Lumpur. You should have been relaxed.
If I was relaxing, I wouldn't be thinking of this.
Daniel White, he emits smoke.
Oh, come on!
Oh, that's pretty cool.
Any kind of smoke.
Yeah.
His hands. What's that?
Like crack smoke?
Any kind you want. So basically, if you need a guy at your party, give you a little smoke on the dance floor.
Nice.
You want to smoke meats? I mean,
There's heat. Is there heat involved?
No heat. Just smoke.
All right.
Yeah.
All right, cool. There you go.
At first, I was annoyed with you. And then I was like, no, it's not bad. Yeah. All right.
This is a weird show. We've identified the fact that it's a weird show. And that's fine. This year is weird. The show is weird.
Let's just move on.
Thank you, patrons. Thank you for supporting us at patreon.com/iFanboy. If you want your own dumb superpower, you can go there and give it the appropriate level. And you can get on the show and get a dumb power and have all is right in the world. You can also help us out by going to iFanboy.com/support. That is where you can find the Amazon link, and that's very important now as we are deep in the holiday season. There's still about 3 weeks left of holiday shopping. If you haven't done that yet, please consider going to fmway.com/support using our link if you're using Amazon for all your shopping needs and doing it there. We get a little piece of that action, and it helps us out, and it doesn't cost you anything, and we really appreciate everybody that does that, especially this time of year. And as I said, patreon.com/iFanboy, that's where you can join our patrons and our many patrons. We're actually in spitting distance, Ron, of bringing back the iFanboy t-shirts, right?
Yes.
So we're going to, if you want iFanboy t-shirts to come back, if you've been around long enough to know we used to have iFanboy t-shirts and you're thinking about joining up, this would be a good time because we are literally about $100 away from bringing back the iFanboy t-shirts.
Listen, so I will go as far to say it would be delightful, folks, to hit that goal by the end of the year. It's just a month ago. All we need
is take that risk.
I'm going to take that risk. All we need is another $100 in patrons. Not much, you know. You can jump on board as low as $1 a month. We got a whole bunch of different levels: $3 a month, $10 a month, $20 a month. But help us get to that goal, and then you get to buy cool t-shirts, which is pretty cool. So,
yeah, and thanks for everyone who does that. We like seeing all the different people up there.
Yep.
And people, you get to vote. There's all kinds of fun things you get to do with this patron.
Yeah.
And also on that page, I believe there's a donation link. Is there not?
There is. You can if Patreon or Amazon isn't for you, and for some reason PayPal is, you can donate directly via PayPal. Any denomination you like. You can say, hey guys, here's $5. Thanks for the good work you do. We appreciate it.
I'm just gonna say, this is not an endorsement. I love PayPal.
Okay.
Big fan.
Okay.
I buy a lot of used stuff.
I should set up a Venmo button. Wait a minute.
Yeah, you should. It's the end of the year. You have to get rid of your cash. I've been on finance meetings this month. We're talking about cash flow at the end of the year, and maybe you need to get rid of some money.
Hey, and no,
donation button.
Donation button's great, and you're shopping on Amazon, so just come and click on our banner first, please. So it's not hard.
Yeah. All right. Better than other shows' Amazon buttons.
Yes, don't forget that. So.
Let's do some email. Ken writes and says, does anyone remember, long for, the days when annuals used to be relevant? I'm thinking Marvel in the 7th.
Completely. All right, move on. Sorry. I just realized we completely skipped a book. But anyway, go on.
Which book did we skip?
I had added a Star Wars annual to Star Wars Corner, but it didn't make the script. So, and this just reminded me of it. But we'll talk about this in the answer. Keep reading the email. Sorry to interrupt. Carry on.
Are you making eyes at Josh right now?
Maybe.
Ken says, does anyone remember or long for the days when annuals used to be relevant? I'm thinking Marvel in the 70s or DC in the 80s. An annual might have an important story, a continuation of an arc in the main book, etc., drawn by the current talent on the series or a reasonable fill-in, sometimes even primetime creators. These days, it seems, especially at Marvel, the annual is a dumping ground for a throwaway one-shot featuring unheard of, often brutally inexperienced talent with little or no impact on current storylines and an optional read at best, quite often completely awful and pointless. What happened?
Wow.
What happened was is that it basically the value of the word, when you put the word fragile on every box, no box becomes fragile anymore. And annuals just became no different than any other book that was coming out. And like you said, they used it as an opportunity to do little stories or try out new talent or stuff like that, and it really eroded it. I agree with Ken in that, like, I miss the halcyon days of Marvel in the late 80s when they used the annuals to tell a singular storyline that you didn't actually need to read the actual books that were going on. It was like, right, the, you know, like the old the X-Men Asgardian Wars took place all in the annuals, and I think Atlantis Attacks did too.
Well, the annuals first. The annuals used to be where the event happened.
Yeah, exactly.
That's where the annual event happened in the annual. So, yeah. on the DC side, Millennium, Armageddon 2001.
Yep.
All those stories happened in the annuals, and instead of getting a miniseries, you got an opening issue, and then all of the annuals, and then you got the closing issue. And Marvel, the same thing. Then they stopped doing that.
Yeah, they just start putting out the events by themselves because publishing became much more advanced. And back in the day, it was a lot more. It was harder to make comic books. The coloring was being sent out to Ireland to be colored, and the comic book industry has just changed so much. And now, if you wanted to make a comic book, you can come up with the idea, get it drawn, get it written, drawn, printed, and in the hands of stores, if you're really good, in 6 to 8 weeks, which is unheard of compared to how it used to be back in the day. So,
And I think you just said, like, if everything is an event,
yep,
there's no events,
right?
And then we live in the all the time event area. Although, like, I want to say, like, I was reading the annuals that we read this year, and most of them have the, like, at least the standard, the regular writer for the series on it. So there's a sense of continuity, and it gives them a chance to tell a different kind of story sometimes.
Right.
And like, yeah, we just talked about the fact that Batman and Superman annuals both had their regular writers on them.
Yeah. And I noted that and liked it.
What bothers me is that, like, there's no... There used to be, like, the time of year. It's annuals time, you know?
Yes, and they all come out at the same time.
And now they're just whenever there's a fifth week or whenever there's, you know, whenever they just have reason to. There's no organization to them.
Because they dump them.
Yeah, it doesn't matter. So, I mean, case in point, if we had Star Wars Corner this week, I would have talked about Star Wars Annual number 2, which didn't feature the creative team on the book. Jason Aaron did write it. Because I like Star Wars and I'm excited for the movie that I know nothing about. And this was written by Kelly Thompson with art by Emilio Lasso. I don't know them from Abe, but I enjoyed the story. It was a fun, nice little, you know, like a New Hope era. You know, Princess Leia gets stranded on a planet and she's injured, and a woman who's not involved in the rebellion has to help her, and then ends up joining the rebellion. That's all fun. So it was a fun, nice little story, but it had no impact on anything going on in the greater Star Wars stories. And the thing that annoyed me about it is that it opens up on a planet, Scorilei. And there's a crash Star Destroyer behind the town. And I'm like, well, that's just lazy.
Yeah.
You know, but anyway. But
I don't know that I want them to have anything to do with what's going on. That doesn't bother me. I just want it to be like,
yeah,
I don't know. I honestly don't care. I just want it to be good.
Yeah, exactly.
And you have to make me want to read it. So, like, I looked at the Star Wars one. I said, I don't know who those people are. You know, like, I like the other book because Jason Aaron's writing it. Yeah. You haven't hooked me.
All right. Again. Next question. Rob from Reading, England says, I've been considering this question since the release of Cry Havoc in January 2016. Do you guys actually read the letter columns / bonus material at the back of most comics? How about extended author's notes and elucidations, like the annotation section of Cry Havoc or the essays in Wayward? Do they add anything to your enjoyment of the medium, or are they fat to trim for your heavy comics diet? Well, I can certainly tell you I don't read the bonus material in Cry Havoc or Wayward.
It depends.
I read Remenders.
I read Remenders. I read at least some of what like Brian Vaughn writes in Saga.
Yeah. Yeah.
I don't necessarily read all the letters, but I read what he has to say. I don't read all the stuff in Lazarus.
Yeah. It's really pick or choose. It's a combination of yeah. how much time I have versus the creator and do I care about what they're saying about. You know, like I read like all the Phonogram and Wicked and Divine, like I read all Kieran stuff, you know, because I've vested interest in the creators versus the, you know, but yeah, I can't do it.
Last month or maybe the month before, Sex, I read Joe Casey's essays because they're fantastic.
Yeah, I skim those to see what they're about. Yeah.
There was one about malls in a comic shop in a mall, and it was like the mall in Burbank that I used to go to, and like, do you remember he used to have a column on Newsarama forever ago?
Yeah,
they were awesome. They're some of the best comic creator columns, you know, that I remember existing. And it feels like that. Like I basically, yeah, I skim them. If I need a reason to read them, I do. I don't tend to read the back matter that explains more about the world of the story because I don't want it. You know what I mean?
Right.
Like if it's like this is what the creator's thinking about when they were creating it, that's one thing, but like here's the explanation.
Like the supplemental stuff or, yeah.
Yeah,
or,
I don't read that.
Yeah.
I don't
yeah.
tend to do that.
Yeah. So. If I'm really loving the book, no. I might, but yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I guess I'm not against it. I just don't tend to. Yeah.
Okay. So there's your answer. Hope it paid off. All right, let's move along. Josh, what do we got to pull
out? People can email us at contact@ifanboy.com.
Yes, how can I forget? Yeah, email us at contact@ifanboy.com. Let us know who you are, where you're from, how long you thought about it, and that's it.
Listen, if this is your first episode listening...
I'm sorry.
I don't know what happened this week.
I don't know if I can pinpoint what you're talking about. It seems mostly okay.
Yeah.
We're choppy.
Bad.
We're choppy.
All right. Fair enough.
We're off by like half a second.
Well, Josh is still coming down from Kuala Lumpur, so.
Right.
Oh, man. Anyway. You should listen to our Booksplode podcast. Booksplode is where we all talk about a single volume of a comic book, graphic novel, trade paperback, something like that. And this last month we did, wait, are we still in? Nope, that was November. We did The Rattler.
Yep.
Yes.
Which was an original graphic novel from Jason McNamara. And oh my God, I just fuzzed out.
Greg Hinkle,
who we'd previously loved on Airboy. And it's a horror thriller story out from Image Comics, came out in the last year. I guess I can say we all liked it because that's usually the case when we do a book.
Yes.
We weren't sure if that was going to be the case with this one, but it's definitely us talking about a genre that I don't think we talk about a lot. And you should check that out. It's a nice little diversion from what we normally do on this show. And you can look forward to those just about every other month. We'll do a Talksplode, which is an interview, 1 month, and then a Booksplode the other month, more or less. Could switch. I don't know. But that is happening because the patrons reached a certain level, and we said, okay, you do that, we're going to do these monthly special shows for you.
There's a great cause and effect with the patrons. They sign up, stuff happens. So there you go.
Oh, it's more work for us.
More work.
So if you're a person listening to this show when it first comes out on a Sunday, which would be Sunday the 4th?
The 4th. Correct.
Sunday the 4th or the day of, the day after Sunday the 5th, Sunday the 5th, December 5th, Monday. That is going to be the date of our final hangout of the year, our patron hangout. Every month we do a patrons only hangout, which we talk for an hour on anything. It's a live hangout, live video, and we just ramble on about stuff. And that's our final one for the year. Our monthly hangout in December is happening December 5th. A Monday night at 9:30 Eastern, 6:30 Pacific. So if you're around and you're a patron, come check it out. Yes. Ron and I are going to be talking about the CW-DC crossover.
So can I show up late?
While Josh reads a magazine.
I think I was actually, as I was watching the show, I was like, I'm really looking forward to talking about this with Connor, and I'm really looking forward to hearing what Josh thinks of it. So thinks of the conversation. So I hope, Josh, you pay attention.
There will be a quiz.
You should also pay attention. Upcoming, we're gonna have a Talksplode coming up this month, most likely. Josh, how's that coming along there?
We're working on it.
We're working on scheduling holidays. But
there's gonna be one. It's gonna happen soon. We haven't nailed it. If it's not the first person, it's gonna be a different person. But we're not going to tell you that.
can we Talksplode with each other? Does that count?
I think that's the patron thing.
Can we just use that as a Talksplode if we run out of time? We'll talk about this offline.
Sure. All right, and that brings us to the holiday December schedule. Connor, take it away.
Yeah, so last week we started talking about the holiday schedule. If you're new to the show, the end of the year is a little bit different than normal. So as we mentioned, there's a Talksplode coming in December. That's your December special episode. And then after that, this is episode 564. You got one more episode of the Pick of the Week podcast left. 565 comes out December 11th. That is the last Pick of the Week podcast of the year. Then we take a couple weeks off. But there's still more shows. The week after that, in the regular Pick of the Week slot, you'll find the 2016 All Media Year in Spectacular, December 18th. That's when we talk about all the things we loved in film and TV and music and all kinds of things that are not comics related, but also some comic stuff on that show. That's always a big favorite for every year. And then a couple days later, December 21st, you'll have the Rogue One, a Star Wars story review. We're saying this only so people don't ask us or stop asking us when that's going to happen. And then the Pick of the Week show comes back to January 8th. That's 566. That will be January 8th. So between December 11th and January 8th, there'll be no Pick of the Week, but then you'll have a couple extra shows in there while everyone enjoys the holidays.
It's going to be a good time. And most importantly, we get a nice little break, and we'll come back recharged in January and ready for another great year of comic book talk.
Better at this. you can hear it. We need that break.
Yeah.
Go over to ifanboy.com and you can comment on this show. You can say, I don't know what you're talking about, guys. I had a good time listening, which is what you should say. You can talk about the books that we talked about, your thoughts on annuals, whatever it is that you choose, how long you've been thinking about either of those things. And of course, all of our past episodes in video and audio form. You can follow us on facebook.com/ifanboy or at ifanboy on Twitter. And of course, individually at Jay Flanagan, at CS Kilpatrick, although kind of a dead link at this point, and at RonXO.
Yes. And if you like what you're hearing, you can go over to iTunes and write a review of it. We love hearing about what people think of the show, good and bad. So let your reviews come flooding in, or anywhere that anybody's talking about podcasts. You know, when you'll be going to a lot of holiday parties, you'll be going to a lot of family events, things like that. Be like, hey, I got a podcast for you to check out. Check out iFanboy. And it's always fun to check out all, you know, to bring new listeners on board. And we thank everybody who helps spread the word. I appreciate it. Oh, and speaking of podcasts, also check out my new podcast, Damn Fine Podcast, over at damnfinepodcast.com, where we're going through Twin Peaks with our buddy Tom Merritt. We just launched last week. Second episode's out. Third episode's coming this week. So please go there and sign up. I appreciate it.
So Damn Fine is a reference to the program.
Yes, it is.
I assume.
Yes.
And that wasn't taken?
Not Damn Fine Podcast wasn't taken, so
that's a good name, even that's if it wasn't. Name.
Yeah, I gotta credit Tom. He's the one who snagged it the day they announced the Showtime series. He went and bought it.
Wrong.
So yeah. All right. Well, that's gonna wrap it up for this week. So until then, I'm Ron.
I'm Connor.
And I'm Josh.